CO 1230 AM, W255DN Wausau. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Eggland's Best.
I'm Vicki Barker. Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky scrambling for traction ahead of next week's summit in Alaska between Presidents Trump and Putin on Ukraine, a summit happening without him. CBS's Margaret Brennan has more.
Zelensky said there's a chance of reaching at least a ceasefire, but he can't give up territory without putting it to a vote. He's been burning up the phone lines, trying to urge the Americans and Europeans to sanction Russia and seize bank accounts, because without more pressure, the Ukrainian officials that I've spoken with fear Putin will refuse to give back territory and just use these negotiations to gain what his troops failed to capture on the battlefield.
The UN Security Council is holding a rare Sunday meeting to discuss the Israeli government's decision to expand its war against Hamas by taking control of Gaza City. There's been widespread condemnation of the plan, condemnation which the Israelis are unlikely to heed, says the BBC. Sees Amir Nader in Jerusalem.
The Minister of Defense saying that all of this condemnation internally, externally, the threats of sanctions on Israel, none of this will weaken our resolve. So there isn't really any sense that this huge international pressure will do anything to shift their thinking over this very dramatic and severe plan that they've announced.
Mediators from Egypt and Qatar are reportedly working on a new framework that will include the release of all hostages and in return for an end to the war in Gaza and the withdrawal of Israeli forces. In Nagasaki, Japan, a little while ago, a ceremony commemorating 80 years since the U.S. dropped its second atomic bomb on Japan. Some 74,000 died that day. Some of the survivors heard their mayor plead never again. In Atlanta yesterday, a gunman opened fire outside CDC headquarters near the campus of Emory University. Police say the gunman is dead.
We later found the shooter on the second floor of the CPS. He had been struck by gunfire. We do not know at this time whether that was from officers or if it was self-inflicted.
One police officer was killed. If you're in Michigan this weekend, you might find a deal at a very long garage sale. CBS's Jennifer Kuiper reports.
Summertime, the weekend, and
yard sale! Yard sale!
Grab your dollars and change if you're in Michigan, because that state's longest garage sale runs through Sunday, stretching 200 miles from Detroit to New Buffalo along U.S. 12.
How much is this? 50 cents. I'll give you a quarter.
You'll find everything from clothes to toys and more at homes, farms, businesses, parking lots, and fields. Remember, one man's junk is another man's treasure.
In California, a fast-growing brush fire north of Los Angeles forced thousands of people to briefly evacuate overnight. Firefighters say that fire is now 28% contained. This is CBS News.
Eggland's Best, the only eggs with more fresh and delicious taste, plus superior nutrition. Eggland's Best, better taste, better nutrition, better egg.
As Wisconsin is cheering on the Brew Crew, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
For Civic Media News, I'm Shelley Pittman. Health researchers are learning more about the human costs linked to transportation emissions. Mike Moen with the Wisconsin News Connection has more.
A new study says the world could prevent nearly 2 million deaths by 2040 if policymakers take a more aggressive and effective approach reducing transportation emissions. And a regional health expert also outlines the daily impact in places like Wisconsin. A group of global researchers is out with new findings that say if the status quo remains, tailpipe emissions will double the number of premature deaths and asthma cases in children in underdeveloped areas. Midwest-based doctor Daniel Trajano is with Health Professionals for a Healthy Climate, and he says locally, emissions disrupt day-to-day life for a lot of people.
Other cases, they make you sick enough, or you're not breathing well, and you know, I got to take several days of school or work off, and that certainly will lead to decreased productivity in the community.
Trajano says air pollution is often associated with large metro areas, but he adds breathing in unhealthy fumes from cars and trucks is a problem in smaller towns and cities, too. He points to kids forced to take longer school bus rides in rural areas, and other studies have found that pollutants can be even more harmful inside a bus. Trajano makes renewed calls for more electric school buses so that kids avoid conditions like asthma and can focus on learning. As for buying an electric car, auto industry analysts say despite sticker shock for some car buyers, EV prices are coming down as technology improves. The authors behind the global study say there needs to be a comprehensive approach to cleaning up the transportation sector beyond sales. The U.S. has made electric vehicle gains, but lags behind places like China and Europe. This is Mike Moen for Wisconsin News Connection. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Find more news anytime at civicmedia.us.
As Wisconsin is hitting the road on your Harley, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. Highs in the upper 80s today, a mix of sun and clouds. It'll be breezy, and the heat index will push into the low to mid 90s. For tonight, showers and storms, lows around 69. Showers and storms on Sunday and highs of 83. Monday, storms in 81.
It's 73 at our studios.
Todd Alba.
Hey, everybody. Join us next time. Take a look back at the big sports events. The Packers kick off the preseason, and the Brewers try to continue the winning streak, and a little news as well. Join us.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays 2 to 4.
Bull Falls Radio, WXCO.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Portions of Native Roots Radio may be pre-recorded.
You're listening to the best of Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake. I'm your host, Wakunjahade, Distant Thunder. My colonized name is Robert Pilot. We discuss national and local Native American news and events. As we all know, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
They are going to become more brutal.
Courtney Cuff, Henny Cuttigan.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake. Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunjahade. A Cuttigy to all my friends and relatives in four directions. You are listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot. Hey, we discuss local, national, Native news and events. And as you know, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues. Hey, I want to really thank our guest, Rachel Dion Thunder, for coming on. And she is with the Indigenous Protectors Movement, and really always great to have you on. You've been, geez, I don't know, you've been on the show maybe the last 5 years. It's just great to see you.
Yeah, I think it has been about 5 years, Robert. Thanks for having me on. I'm a little bit tired, just full transparency. I was on, took the interns out from IPM today to the Needy Walk that IPTF and Sharon Day do every year, and so we were out walking and running today for the water, but it was beautiful. It was really nice to be out there.
Wow. That's awesome. And that's another big Pinigigi. Thank you for coming on, for being tired. You're always a great guest. And we, you know, and I would really love if you could tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and Indigenous Protectors Movement.
Sure. You know, where do I start? So my name is Rachel Tonse. I am Big Stone Cree Nation, Plains Cree, Nihio, Nihiwak, Treaty 8. Currently live here in South Minneapolis, American Indian Movement, second generation, and, you know, one of the co-founders and now vice president of the Indigenous Protector Movement. And so the Indigenous Protector Movement is a Indigenous-based org here in South Minneapolis that myself, my husband, Vinny Dion, Crow Belcourt, Jolene Jones, and Nick Estes started back in 2023. So we're pretty new. You know, and what we really saw was this niche in community that wasn't being met. And when I talk about this niche, I mean this in like resources for Indigenous activism, right? And so like traditionally in the past, there were entities here that were functioning at a high capacity, like the American Indian Movement. And, you know, things have just dwindled down over time. And we saw this need to, you know, start something new and fresh while also honoring, you know, the past and the history and all the sacrifices and also carrying that name on. And so that's why we started IPM. And, you know, we've been pretty busy since the jump. You know, I think that a lot of the listeners probably know about Mini Shields. That's one of our programs that we do sponsor here in South Minneapolis. And so that's all Native Indigenous men, you know, finding a traditional role and purpose in a modern setting, and, you know, helping protect and keep our community safe and also growing and healing as men. You know, I was listening to one of the commercials as we were coming on, and it made me think about, you know, the work that we need to do in healing each other, you know, holding each other accountable. And so that's like that brotherhood that started with Mini Shields. And then we have kind of like the sister program called the Women's Warrior Society, that we also run, and we meet every other Tuesday. We're actually going to have a meeting tomorrow night where we're going to be planning a smudge walk coming up. And so just invite all of our Native Indigenous sisters to come join us. It's from 5 to 7 p.m. at the Minneapolis American Indian Center. And so we're going to have that tomorrow night. We serve food and just spend time together, you know, and plan. Sometimes we do self-defense classes. We've done Narcan trainings. We have a CPR training coming up. And so the thinking is, you know, to empower our women in community to not only to protect themselves, but to protect their children, their families, and if they need to, their community. And we want to empower them in order to do that, you know, to feel safer, to feel stronger, to have that sisterhood built here in South Minneapolis. You know, a lot of natives come here from like reservations, and they're, you know, they're looking for community. And that's a big part of what we do at IPM is community building. You know, building our community stronger, because we are an action and advocacy based organization. But if our community is not strong and healed, how can we expect our people to respond when these issues pop up? Right.
Yeah. Wow. Exactly.
So, yeah. So we have to focus on healing this multi-generational trauma, and we need to shift that mindset to multi-generational healing. We need our people to be sober. We can't just expect to continue to survive. We need to shift into a thriving mindset.
It's amazing what you mentioned too. I heard through Minneapolis Public Schools that there's over 150 different tribes recognized here in Minneapolis specifically, and also 75,000 Native Americans in the Twin City area, making it the biggest urban Native community in the country. People looking for what you say and finding it in, you know, with Indigenous Protectors Movement and also the other groups. I see what you're doing, and people see what you're doing, and I love to be able to be on with you and amplify your great work, even if you are a little tired. Oh, wow.
that's why I still came on, you know, because we can't just do the work. We have to also share what we're doing, right? Like, as Native people, we're taught to be humble, right? Like, be humble, you know, be humble in what you're doing. And like, we need to keep that tradition, but we also need to like be more comfortable in using our voices, you know, use your voice, speak it out, you know, into the universe, like what you're doing or what you want, you know, like you're setting that intention, and like, how are people going to know what we're doing or what they can attend or what they can go to or how they can plug in if we're not speaking it out, except for our inner circle. So that's something I really advocate for.
Well, and I see on your post from your site and your personal posts on social media that it's a groundswelling. There is quite a few people that are doing, you know, the Women's Warrior Society and Mini Shields. And to me, being an old person, that's really exciting to see, you know, these kind of actions come back. Like you said earlier, you know, just last week, it was 1968 when American Indian Movement started in Minneapolis. And we love talking about that. But also now with Indigenous Protectors Movement stepping in, There's hope, and there's hope, and there's a voice, and I appreciate what you and your husband and all the members are doing.
Yeah, you know, and there's so many people, because it's, you're right, because it's not just me, and it's not just my husband. Like, there are countless people out here every day, you know, that go unnoticed, that are putting that work in, and that is really what it is to be American Indian Movement. American Indian Movement is a spirit, it's a way of life, it's a way of being. And even before it was officially founded in 1968, the American Indian Movement existed. You know, Sitting Bull was American Indian Movement. You know, all of our ancestors were American Indian Movement. American Indian Movement has existed since the beginning of colonization. It's how you choose to live your day-to-day life. It's what are you doing to better yourself, better your family, better your people, you know, to bring us into those better days, to heal our people, and to ground yourself in that traditional spiritual way. And, you know, American Indian Movement did a beautiful thing. It made it really cool to be Indian again, right? Like, yeah. it was like everybody wanted to be Indian and was proud to be Indian and proud of our ways. And they did a lot of beautiful work. And now, you know, we're in a new day. It's a new time, some similar issues, but, you know, we're up against some stuff that I don't think our ancestors ever dreamed of. And we got to all come together. We got to heal. We got to get sober. We got to support each other, you know, to get through this.
Right on. Hey, we're here with Rachel Dion Thunder, Indigenous Vice President and co-founder of Indigenous Protectors Movement here in the Twin Cities and nationally. And we're going to take a quick break. This is Native Roots Radio.
This is Bull Falls Radio, WXCO.
There was a time when barbecue was perfect. A strong, reliable flavor that could be counted on. But then big manufacturers decided that barbecue needed to be zesty or spicy or sweeter or whatever. If you miss the good old days of great tasting barbecue, we'd like to introduce you to Grandpa's Barbecue. Made in small batches from Grandpa's original recipe. Buy yours online today at grandpasbarbecueshop.com.
At Hazelden Betty Ford, treating mental health isn't just about breaking old patterns. It's about braving new ones. As the leader in alcohol and drug treatment for 75 years, we know caring for addiction, anxiety, depression, and trauma goes hand in hand. We're here for you with new tools when life breaks down. Discover your path to better mental health at HazeldenBettyFord.org/Wisconsin. Sponsored by Hazelden Betty Ford Foundation.
You're listening to Bull Falls Radio, WXCO.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Oho, this is Dallas Goldtooth, and you're listening to the Native Roots Radio. Hoka, hecha, wecha.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot. Hey, welcome back, everyone. We are here with Rachel Dion Thunder, Indigenous Protectors Movement, and we're kind of talking about the history. And I'd like to get into the nuts and bolts of what you guys do. I know see you on the Woman Warrior Society and Many Shields doing work in the community. Let's talk a little bit about that.
Right. So, you know, we talked a little bit about that. So at IPM, and I really want to say that here in Minneapolis, this is a very unique setting, right? This is like a blessing with how many Native and Indigenous organizations and businesses there are here. There's not anywhere like this that is so centralized in the rest of the country, in an urban setting. And so as IPM, you know, a big part of what we do is the community building, right? Like is creating those traditional, or recreating those traditional roles and purposes for our people, because a lot of our people have lost their purpose. They don't know what their role is. They don't know how to fit into this modern world that, you know, that we're being forced to live now. And so how do we create those traditional roles and purposes, but through a modern lens, right? So like, that's like with Many Shields, is creating like that warrior society, like for our men to be a part of, right? That's, so that is a big part of what we do, is community building. And then, you know, of course, like we do focus on advocacy and Indigenous issues. And there's so many right now. There's, you know, everything that is happening with ICE and the deportation, you know, and the backlash of like what happens to you if you stand up and you protest against it. And then there's the issues of, you know, our unhoused, our relatives that are currently, you know, without housing, without resources, our relatives that are in active addiction. How do we heal that? We're losing an entire generation to overdoses and fentanyl. How do we stop that? You know, and then you talk about community safety. Our, you know, like talk about like when AIM Patrol was a thing. AIM Patrol was never having to go up against fully automatic guns with switches and drums on them. So how do we as a people, how do we, you know, they say like, you know, who keeps us safe? We keep us safe. Well, how do we keep us safe when you're going up against something like that? How do we as a community go up against something like that? How do we stop these drug dealers from coming into community? And so, you know, when you hear advocacy or you hear protesting or you hear rallying, like, yes, there's like these obvious issues of like current administration and ICE, but there's also these issues that are so complex. It's like, how do we as a community, as a people, stand together and stop it? And so that, and that takes a lot of effort. It takes a lot of strategy, takes a lot of tough conversations. It takes a lot of healing, Robert. You know, I think that this is a trend I've noticed, like in the activism community, is, you know, a lot of activists will point fingers at other activists and say, well, what are you doing about this? And what are you doing about that? And we need to remove that mindset, because not everybody can do something about every single thing. We need to be very strategic. We need to say, you know, well, this person is gifted in speaking, so they're, you know, they're going to be the spokesperson. This person is gifted in writing, you know, in grant writing, and so they're going to write our grants, so we make sure we have resources to do these programs. And so we can't just expect every single person to be out boots on the ground. Everybody has their gifts and their strengths that are given to them from Creator. And we need to be strategic about that. And we need to be positive about that. We need to shift from these unhealed, toxic, negative mindsets. We need to support our youth and these younger generations and younger leaders coming up. There's a lot of gatekeeping that happens. And so all of these things like need to be addressed. They need to be addressed like within community without the finger pointing. Because when the finger pointing happens and the blaming happens, there's no real positive solution that comes out of that. And so at IPM, we really try to center ourselves around people, around our elders, around individuals, organizations that have that positive mindset, that are solution driven, that have a vision for the future that they're making, you know, tangible steps towards. And then how do we as IPM do our piece to fit into that? Whether it's the community building, whether it's advocacy, whether it's a protest or a march, or a ceremony, you know, how can we fit into that piece?
You know, that's I really appreciate you bringing that up. And we tiptoe sometimes around what we call, people, like you said, gatekeeping and being negative towards each other. And we need to call that out in a good way and be a good example. I just ignore it. Because you can't butter the right side of the bread for a lot of people. And a lot of them aren't doing anything. Your boots on the ground, your husband's boots on the ground. And those people aren't healed. So if I look at it in that way, I can move forward and keep on doing what I'm doing, whether it's the radio show or whether it is going boots on the ground. And so...
And that's your part, Robert. You know, I mean, like, look at all of this news and information that you spread across the world, across Indian country, just from doing this show. You know what I mean? Like, then that's just one piece of what you do. And then, you know, all the work you've done with youth and kids over the years, like, everybody has their part. And I think it's also important to remember that, like, we do need to hold each other accountable, you know, but we need to do it in a way that, you know, like, don't make a Facebook post about the person. Sit down, you know, give tobacco. Like, if you need somebody to help you with something, offer them tobacco. You know, you need to honor those ways and set that intention, like that positive energy in our interactions. And I think that we just get caught up in emotions. And because these are like very tense issues, these are issues that our people are dying, and you know, it's serious, it's very serious things. And so we get caught up in that, and then we forget to do, you know, our relational conversations, you know, and that's part of our power, is our connection to each other. You know, and if people want to have a toxic mindset, you know, or, you know, they are not open to healing, that's on them. You know what I mean? Like, we can't take that personally. We just have to continue to move on and do better, so our next generations have a better mindset. We need to set that example.
Well, I know you do, and I know your husband does, and I know your family does, and it is the next generation. You have a little one, and you have stepkids, and I have grandkids, and it's not about us anymore, is it? It's about the future generations, as our elders talked about, the next seven generations.
Mm-hmm. You know, and some of these issues, like, you know, we talk about like sobriety, you know, the drug and alcohol epidemic, the fentanyl epidemic, and people are like overwhelmed. They're like, how are we going to stop something like that? But I would say that anything is possible. You know, we can't forget that, like, when we come together as Indigenous people and we come together in a good way, we come together in prayer with good intention, with good hearts, good minds, and we really do the work. We do the damn work, Robert. Like, nothing is impossible. And I mean, Leonard Peltier being free after nearly 50 years of incarceration is a testament to that.
Yes.
You know, like, you never give up. You can never give up. Don't ever give up on yourself. Don't ever give up on your family, your children, and do not ever give up on your people, because nothing is ever a lost cause.
Well, you know, Rachel, great words as always. I want to just talk a little bit, because I know you're a little tired, and we're going to have Dr. Stately on next, but I wanted to bring up that some of the work you're doing with the youth, and one of it is a podcast over at KFGI. I was really happy to be able to see that go on and have a few of them on as guests at KFAI when I was on, and maybe you have a little update, and this is just another leg of your work.
Sure. So this year at IPM, we took on two interns from Indigenous Peoples Task Force through their intern program, and the whole focus of their internship with IPM is to produce and film and publish a podcast for IPM. And so the interns have named it Sage in the City. And each episode is going to focus on an issue that is present here in community, but also is like present across Indian country. And so they're going to look at, you know, how that issue is being addressed here locally within this community, and then also nationally. And so they just finished filming their very first intro episode. And so stay tuned. It'll be coming soon on, you know, all of the different platforms, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Facebook, YouTube. We're really excited about that. It's called Sage in the City.
I like that name better than Native Roots Radio, darn it.
They came up with it. All credit to our youth.
No doubt. Well, a big Pini Gigi, if anyone wants to donate or find out more about your organization, Indigenous Protectors Movement, is there a place where we can land?
Yeah, for sure. So we're on Facebook, Indigenous Protector Movement. We're on Instagram, Indigenous Protector Movement. On Facebook, there's a link, like a button right there. You can donate. We also have a website, indigenousprotectormovement.com. It has all of our programs. If you want to read more in depth on our history, you know, where we're at, where we're going. And there's also a donate option on there too, Robert.
Excellent. Rachel Dion Thunder, you know, thank you. Indigenous Protectors Movement, Pini Gigi, thank you so much for coming on. And really, you're always great. And we got to make this happen more often. Thank you so much.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you, Robert. I'll come on more. I'll make
sure. Right on. Okay, yeah. Everyone heard that. Right on. All right, we'll be right back with Dr. Stately. This is Native Roots Radio.
You're listening to Bull Falls Radio WXCO, home of the big high school sports show.
CBS News Brief. Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky scrambling for traction ahead of next week's summit in Alaska between Presidents Trump and Putin on Ukraine, a summit happening without him.
Without more pressure, the Ukrainian officials that I've spoken with fear Putin will refuse to give back territory and just use these negotiations to gain what his troops failed to capture on the battlefield.
CBS's Margaret Brennan. There's been widespread condemnation of the Israeli plan to expand its war against Hamas by taking control of Gaza. Gaza City. Here's the BBC's Emir Natter in Jerusalem.
The Minister of Defense saying that all of this condemnation internally, externally, the threats of sanctions on Israel, none of this will weaken our resolves.
In Nagasaki, Japan, a little while ago. A ceremony commemorating 80 years since the U.S. dropped its second atomic bomb on Japan. Some 74,000 died that day. Some of the survivors heard their mayor plead never again. CBS News Brief, I'm Vicki Barker.
As Wisconsin is cheering on Bucky Badger, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
It's the Packers and the Jets. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports from Lambeau Field, where the Packers play their first of three preseason games tonight against the Jets. New York has a new head coach, Aaron Glenn, who says his quarterback, Justin Fields, and others are improving on offense.
That group in the back end is doing a hell of a job. And the other thing that we've been preaching, just emotional maturity. When things go bad, man, listen, this is a tough game, and things don't always happen as crisp as you want it, but you always got to get it out your mind and go on to the next play, and our guys did a good job of doing it.
Matt LaFleur says he's trying to remind players not to lose focus on what they've been taught on the practice field to across the street inside 1265 Lombardi Avenue.
One of the things that was good with, like, family night, first time being in front of that many people, and it's interesting to see how people don't always take what they've been training across the street into Lambeau. It's just another opportunity for these guys.
Baseball, the Brewers host the Mets tonight. Milwaukee winning a thriller last night, 3-2. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
As Wisconsin has a fish fry on a Friday night, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. Highs in the upper 80s today, a mix of sun and clouds. It'll be breezy, and the heat index will push into the low to mid 90s. For tonight, showers and storms, lows around 69. Showers and storms on Sunday and highs of 83. Monday, storms in 81.
It's 73 at our studios.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. With sinking approval ratings and the 2026 midterms looming, President Donald Trump asked Texas legislators to further gerrymander congressional maps and preserve a GOP advantage in the U.S. House. Sinking to the challenge, Democratic states are threatening to cheat in their states, too. States rarely redistrict mid-decade. Trump's unfavorable ratings reached 56% in a July 28th Economist YouGov poll, and with only a 219-212 GOP advantage in the U.S. House, Trump asked the Texas legislature for help. The GOP already has 25 of the state's 38 U.S. House seats, but July 30th, the legislature unveiled a map targeting Democratic districts in Austin, Dallas, Houston, and South Texas to gain an extra 5 GOP seats, according to the Texas Tribune. Ohio, another GOP-dominated state, is also redistricting, and Florida Governor Ron DeSantis suggested his state's congressional map may have, quote, defects that need to be remedied. Leaders in blue states, including California, Illinois, Maryland, and New York, have threatened to counteract gerrymandered GOP gains. While California Governor Gavin Newsom threatened, his state uses a constitutionally protected independent redistricting commission, as do six other blue states, making it harder to game the system. We have all our Redistricting Week reports at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
For 75 years, the Muscular Dystrophy Association's voices have thundered through the halls of Congress.
For 75 years, we've willed the impossible into existence.
For 75 years, the MDA community has pushed the science,
shifted the narrative,
and established the field of neuromuscular medicine.
And until that day, when this is all a thing of the past,
you couldn't stop us if you tried.
Join us and celebrate 75 years of breakthroughs at MDA75.org.
Pat Kreitlow.
On Monday, we'll talk to Tom Nelson about his new book, comparing the wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald to how the economy has been turning against its workers.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Aneen, I'm Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan, and you are listening to Native Roots Radio.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot. Hey, welcome back, everyone. Hey, we are here with our friend, Dr. Stately. Dr. Stately is, and I wrote this down so I get it right, CEO of Native American Community Clinic. Welcome, Dr. Stately. Hey, always great to see you. Thank you so much for spending time with us.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for not confusing me with Robert Pilot. I mean, Robert, the other Robert.
Robert Blake. No, Robert, wait.
No, the other Robert.
Wait, Lilligren. Oh, yeah.
Lilligren, yeah. Yeah.
Right. Well, believe you me, it works both ways. And when we were doing the started doing 5 days a week, it was touch and go there for me there on Clinic and Development Institute. Yeah. Hey, Dr. Stately, I just got to mention this. We just had Rachel Dion Thunder on Indigenous Protectors Movement. And my goodness, the future looks bright when we talk to leaders like that.
Yeah, no, it's really wonderful. You know what makes me so? I spent my morning doing a bunch of other things, but I also spent most of my day in a meeting with several folks from several different organizations across the Twin Cities here, but specifically a couple of them that, like us, work in the cultural corridor here, and you know, we're part of this group called the Birthing Justice Collaborative, right, or collective, and we are working specifically on the initiative to create the American Indian Birthing Center in the Twin Cities. Wow. Wow. Right, and I didn't know this at the time that we were starting that process, but apparently, like, there is not another Native American Indian owned and operated birthing center in the United States, the contiguous United States, and that we would be the first one. So, like, you know, like the effort and the work that goes into developing this thing as part of our collaborative is really challenging, right? Of course, like, gosh, you know, it's hard to do something when there's not a model for it already. But just sitting in that space today with people and spending time talking about all of the different things that all of our partnering organizations do already in this space, and all the things that we have, ideas we have for advancing maternal and child health through this birthing center. And it just was like I had this moment where I was like, looked around the room and I was like, this must be what it felt like to be, some of our elders from the generation before me, like my mom, mm-hmm. Clyde, all these folks that sort of like helped create a uh-huh. few things, right? Sat around and talked about the issues in our community and the challenges that we had around, you know, health disparities, mortality, all the things that, all the violence and all these other things that, you know, they were confronted with. It's many of the same things that we are still struggling with at different times here in the Twin Cities now, right? Mm-hmm. But I was like, at the end of the meeting, I was like, this is what it must have been. It felt like where we were like spending time ideating and mm-hmm. talking about all of the things that we had and talking about the answers we already had in our own community.
Wow.
You know, and how we would go to legislature and how we go to these philanthropy and we go to these places to ask for the support to let us just do the work that we already know how to do. So it was like just a really beautiful day for me. I was like, wow. And so when I see Rachel, I see her husband, Vinny, and a bunch of other young people in our community doing amazing things, I just feel really inspired. I was like, you know, we're doing the work that the generation before us did and the generation before them did, you know, this mm-hmm. work that we're carrying forward. And our responsibility is to do this work in the best way we possibly can and then hand it off to the next generation.
Right.
So that in two or three or four generations, it's still there. It's bigger or even brighter or better. And then that's the work that we have to do as Native people in our communities, is to hold that work and carry the work forward from one generation to the next, pass it on, give it legs, support it, support the young people doing it. And then I'm really proud and happy of, for Rachel and all of those folks who are stepping into those spaces. And, you know, I'm closer to the end of my career than I am at the beginning, and she's starting, and I'm really proud that she's doing that work. So pretty cool.
Yeah, very cool. I remember Madonna, Thunderhawk, there was a lull in the time where activism was really happening, and then Standing Rock hit, and it really built her up again. I mean, she's in her 80s now, and she's been involved with everything, but she was like, for a while there, where is everybody? And now, you know, that they talked about the seven fires, and I really believe that, and I've seen it, and I've experienced it myself personally from Standing Rock, that all these good things are happening, and our youth are, you know, I just have nothing but positive feelings too, Dr. Stately.
Yeah. I feel like, you know, when I'm in those spaces and I'm having conversations with those young people who are really, you know, stepping into those difficult moments and those spaces and, you know, navigating that space with, you know, leadership, even if they've never done it before, then they're like asking elders for advice, and they're like, you know, taking that advice, and they're sort of like working strategically to do those things. It makes me feel hopeful, you know. Makes me feel hopeful. There was like a few moments over the last few years where I didn't feel all that hopeful, but
right. And I think that's what Madonna was talking about too. And now we see it, you know, the language, and, you know, we talked about a lot with, you know, we had the boarding school issues, and they were trying to get rid of us, and some of the way to deal with that would be to just, I don't want to say be colonized, but fit in, and not for the protection of your children. And I think now this generation's really popped up in the last two generations, I think.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's a lot to be said for, like, you know, that strategy for surviving, right?
Yeah.
I remember one of my most difficult conversations with my mother when I was young, was a conversation I had with her when I was upset with her. I was angry with her. We were having some challenging times, and, you know, in my teenage years, at 16, 17, 18, kind of a thing. And I was mad, and I was pissed about something. And, you know, and one of the things our fight was about, she sent me and my older siblings to boarding school when I was 5 years old. And, you know, I wanted to, like, I asked her, like, you know, why did you do that? Why did you make that decision? Did you know? And I think I was mad at her, and, you know, she had a few drinks, and we were arguing, and I said, you know, did you know what those people did to me there? And, you know, and she had a moment where she was crying, and we had that thing, and I'll never forget the impact of that conversation on me. She goes, well, I didn't have a choice. You know, child protection was going to take you all away from me. And I knew that, and this is 1965 or 66. So, you know, what she knew is that, like, families that were taken away from their parents, they were put into, you know, dispersed and put in different homes, and those families never saw, a lot of them never saw their children again, or their siblings again, right?
Right.
And so, you know, I mean, I remember when she said that, it was like a pile of bricks fell on top of me, where I was like, oh gosh, you know, I'm being a little bit of a a-hole here and attacking her. You know, those conversations I would have with her, like, why didn't you teach us their language? Why didn't you teach us these things, right? And she was like, well, you know, my parents, my grandparents encouraged us not to do that, right? And that was the legacy of those generations of boarding school survivors and attendees, that went before me, my mom, my grandparents, my great grandparents.
Yeah.
We were encouraged not to do it. So
it's interesting with my family, which was a large family, my Gaga, my grandma, took one of her sons, my uncles, my Daga, everywhere she went when it came to powwows and all that, but just one out of the 11. And he isn't a gatekeeper, but he has knowledge whenever I want to know anything about the family or so there. Mm-hmm. She did do that.
Yeah. You know, I think one of the things that I remember my mom having really like intentional conversations with us about like, you know, you take care of each other. You and your siblings are the only thing you have is each other like this. You know, so that relationship, those relationships are like the most important ones to protect. And I just remember like, you know, those conversations from a very young age. And those are still conversations that stay in my head. I have these conversations now with my own sons. You know, they have their little bloody mm-hmm. wars that they have sometimes where they get upset with each other. Like, you know, who pulls more girls from, you know, whatever social they're on or whatever. And they start having little wars about it. And I'm like, hey, like, you can't fight with each other about this. Like, you're all the other person has, really. If I was gone tomorrow, you'd be this guy would be your only and deepest and longest friend and confidant that you would have in your life.
Right.
You have to treasure that relationship.
Amazing.
Not saying you can't be mad at him. Like, you just can't like hit each other or punch each other or, you know, talk disparagingly about each other. It's just not, you know, not something we do.
Yeah. And it's interesting. We have to teach our young ones, and it's really gotten in my face right now because I have a grandson and a granddaughter that are they're 1 year old now, and you think about things like that, you know.
My son's turned 18 a couple months ago, and you know, I just think about like where I was when I was their age, and I look around and I think about all of the things that weren't here when I was 18.
Yeah.
That are now, and all of the things that our generation, the generation before us, and the generation before us, before that generation, built for their beneficence, right?
And, yeah.
And I talk to them about that. I'm like, you have a responsibility to continue this for your children and grandchildren.
Well, I'm sure you've been a great example. Hey, we're here with Dr. Stately and Native American Community Clinic President and CEO, and we'll be right back after this short break.
Old Falls Radio, WXCO.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. With Governor Tony Evers choosing not to run for a third term, that means we're going to have the first open race for governor in 16 years. We already know who some of the candidates will be. On the Democratic side, Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez launched her campaign, and Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley said he's running. On the Republican side, Washington County Executive Josh Showman and Southeastern Wisconsin Business Executive Bill Berrien are running. Many more are expected to join the race. And it's not just governor that will have an open race. We could see open races for Attorney General, Lieutenant Governor, Secretary of State, and State Treasurer, too. Couple that with what's happening in the state legislature, no longer under gerrymandered maps, the year 2026 is going to bring a rather unique moment for voters in Wisconsin to determine the path forward on a fresh new era for the state. I know some can be wary of change, but let's embrace this as the real opportunity that it is.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area.
You're listening to Bull Falls Radio, Wausau's home for Metnair on Air.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot. Hey, in this portion of the show, we like to bring awareness to our Minnesota and Wisconsin wolf population to say no to the wolves. Oh!
Oh!
No to the wolf hunt, I meant to say. Oh, we would say yes to the wolves.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was going to say, you don't say no to the wolves.
Yeah, well.
Granny said no to the wolves. Look what happened to her.
Oh, gee. Wow. Yeah. That's heavy. That was heavy. Yeah. You know, we're here with Dr. Stately, CEO of Native American Community Clinic here in Minneapolis in the Twin Cities. And we always have an interesting conversation. And I think with the first guest, it kind of started out because we really talked about, you know, lateral oppression and also people's working for the good of the community and keeping an eye on the prize, basically. And that sometimes is hard to do.
Yeah, it sure is. Well, there's a lot to be distracted by out there. You know, there's a lot going on in the world, and there's a lot even going on in our community that can distract you, you know. I'm not going to lie. I like to watch a good, funny or spicy TikTok or, you know, Instagram reel, you know, I can enjoy that, but I try not to do it for hours and on end. In fact, I'm really, really bad at social media. People are always like, I left you a message on TikTok or I left you a message on Instagram or Facebook. Like a month ago, and you still haven't responded. I was like, well, yeah, I'm busy. So anyway. the people who really need to talk to me have my phone number.
Right. And then you have the choice to respond or not.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Yeah. But I was like just thinking, like, you know, there's that we live in a world where like that certainly is a big, huge thing. Right. It's like, you know, all the things that we can be distracted by. And it does pull our attention away from the things that matter a lot, but, you know, which is why we have elders, right? Which why we have, like, you know, elders like you.
A baby elder?
A baby elder. I don't know. You're not really a baby elder. Oh, are you going to be 64 soon?
65. May. Yeah. I already am 64. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So you're gonna be 65 soon, right? And you know,
another year.
Behind. I'm on your hot on your heels. A couple of years behind you.
On recovery too, which is funny.
Huh?
I say you're sober too, just a few years behind me too, which is funny.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of strange, I guess. Did you get sober at 23? Like I did.
Yes, I did. Yes, I did.
Yeah, I got sober at 23. And so I was telling somebody the other day, like how like I'm like, well, I'm in my 60s. You're like, you don't look 60. I was like, well, you're used to looking at people who are, you know, ridden hard and put away wet.
Yeah.
I haven't done that in a really long time, so I can kind of pass. But but I think that's the thing is, like, I've been deep in this space because I'm going to give a talk tomorrow at this at an NIEA gathering. National Indian Education Association gathering. I've been asked to talk about my experience about growing up in Minneapolis. Mm. You know, during the 60s, 70s, and 80s, during the time when, you know, there was like this big, you know, when the big, huge renaissance was happening, the revival of the Native culture and language and history.
Survival schools
and things like that. And just like to talk about like what it was like to live here in this space and place and be a young person growing up and watching all of this unfold before me. Right. Mm-hmm. And how that sort of informs like my worldview of things and how, you know, and you know, it was like, you know, I had to carve my own way too. I was born and raised in a community of like, you know, activists and, you know, mm-hmm. I had loud and angry aunties at the tables of my dinners and things like that long before there was Instagram and TikToks. Right. Yeah. And so, you know, those are the things that shaped who I was most of my entire life because, you know, my mom and many of my extended family members, both men and women, were really deeply involved in, you know, the early shaping and the cultivating and the growing of American Indian movement. You know, the Belcourt brothers were my uncles through marriage and through, you know, I was involved in their lives. My uncle Les Belcourt and my aunt lived across the driveway from us for most of our lives. And I had, you know, Clyde and his and Vernon's children were my cousins, and I spent lots of time with them. And Dennis and my aunt Jeanette had children, and I grew up with those. So I was like, I'm going through Dick Bancroft's book, and I'm reading about some of the stuff and trying to just kind of remember what I was like during that period of time and center my mind there. And I'm thinking about how, like, you know, when I was a little kid, I didn't really know what the hell they were up to. You know, they were just my uncles, and they were just, like, you know, and you know, Pat Bellinger and all these other people, they were just my aunties. They were just like, you know, people I would see regularly at my house. And
why does Clyde have a bullet hole in his chest?
I don't remember that, but you know, but yeah, holy, they just look just indigenous as F, you know, and
yeah.
I was also looking through, like, a you know, that Dick Bancroft book, We Are Still Here, which is, you know, his photo history of the following Indian American Indian movement. And I saw a picture of my sister's husband, Gabriel Horn. He was my teacher in high school for English and a couple of other classes, but he was also a teacher at the Red Schoolhouse, which I ended up working at later in my life too. So,
wow.
It was like one of these. So it was just like, I was going down this memory lane about, like, my early childhood and my early adolescence here in Minneapolis and how all that shaped who I was. You know, I moved away from here when I was 23 years old and lived on the West Coast for, you know, 18 years before I came back, or 19 years before I came back. Wow. I come back and the place is a lot different, but it's also same. Same in the sense that, like, you know, we have all these things that are going on in our community. We have, like, this huge plethora of organizations and people and movements happening within our community you know, have sprung forth of, like, from that primordial ooze that our ancestors in a generation or two have given right here in Minneapolis. It's like, this is a place of innovation and indigenous resistance. And, like, that's baked into my blood. That's, like, baked into my DNA. And so it's just a really wonderful place to be. I'm really proud that I'm really happy I came home, and I'm raising my kids here in this space, because I want them to understand how important it is to continue that work long into the future.
It's so interesting, and that's what Rachel and I were talking about in the beginning of the show too. Yeah, and geez, you know, all the bars are gone from Franklin Avenue, but we still have. Yeah. I mean, that was.
Who would have thought that would have ever happened, right?
Right.
You know, exactly. I went to every one of those bars actually with a fake ID, I might add.
I think I got beat up in one of those bars, but
oh, God.
That's a whole different story. But I was kind of mouthy. I know it's hard to believe. Hey, we only got 30 seconds left. Dr. Stately, a big peeny geeky, thank you so much for coming on. And, you know, as always, it's always a pleasure here at Native Roots Radio, and people look forward to hearing from you. So thank you so much.
You take care. Kigawam, and have a great evening.
Right on. Hey, this is Native Roots Radio. If you're listening to the show, you are part of the resistance. We're still here. We are the seventh generation.
This is Bull Falls Radio, WXCO. Jane Matt Nair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, if you feel like you missed out on the weekend news, no worries. Civic Media's Charlie Pittman, news director, will join us to keep us updated. Don't miss it.
Matt Nair on air, weekday mornings 9 to 11.
I'm Ryan.
I'm Paul.
We're from the Wausau Business Show, 100% action-packed Wausau, every Saturday, 8 to 9 on Bull Falls 98.9 WXCO. We're also available on Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts.
You're nailing it. Keep going.
WausauBusiness.com. We broadcast from the tippy top of Rib Mountain. So we'll see you Saturday, Wausaunians.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening and loving Wausau, Wisconsin, USA.
As Wisconsin as a game of cribbage with good friends, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Bull Falls Radio.
WXCO 1230 AM, W255DN Wausau.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
Every 15 seconds, someone is diagnosed with cancer. If it's happened to you or someone you love, the American Cancer Society can help at every step of the journey. Visit cancer.org today.
As Wisconsin is dropping a line in your favorite fishing spot, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
The following program is produced in a timeshare agreement with Civic Media. The views in this program do not necessarily reflect those of Civic Media. Enjoy.
Oh, you want to go to the okay, you want to keep going.
That's probably good.
Serving Wausaunia.
Okay, let's keep going. It's the Wausau Business Show. We're on another episode.
Oh, here we go.
Let's go.
Fair week, yeah.
The Wausau Business Show.
Station depots. This is the business show for Wausau, Wisconsin, USA, called the Wausau Business Show.
Yeah.
Episode number 59.
We're back again.
Open for business. I'm Ryan.
I'm Paul.
Paul,